And welcome to Mining Stock Daily from the Beaver Creek Precious Metals Summit. I have John Robbins here from Discovery Group. He's the founder of that group. And it's a conversation I've been wanting to have with you, John, for a number of weeks now, ever since I was formally introduced to you up in the Yukon back in July. We were on the Fireweed Tour, and you and I had a quick chance to kind of sit down and chit-chat a little bit and kind of get a rundown of your history and your experience leading up to the founding Discovery Group and the success you really have found in the recent couple of years. But if you can just provide the listeners kind of an overall blanket summary of what Discovery Group is and how you operate.
Thanks. Discovery Group is, I guess, a group of like-minded explorationists looking at a variety of different exploration targets and development plays, around the world. We have a gold development story in Guatemala project that we're getting ready to, hopefully this time next year we're giving a construction update on our gold project there. And Base Metals is where we met in the Yukon, Fireweed, one of the world's, best undeveloped zinc plays. And I guess, what we've tried to do is just work with really good people, trying to find the smartest guys in our industry, get exposure to, upcoming and exciting exploration plays using the best science out there and looking for great opportunities. Like Great Bear is a perfect example of that, working with a guy like Chris Taylor, who's like top in his field, and now we're working on now what maybe is the most exciting exploration story in Canada, if not one of the most exciting in the world. So
how many other companies are kind of underneath that Discovery Group umbrella right now?
There's eight companies in the group right now, and they range everything from very grassroots exploration plays like, Dunedin is transitioning from diamonds into copper and has a couple of very interesting drill plays there. K2, which is, was originally sort of formed to follow on the heels of our success with Kaminak. So originally we focused in the Yukon. Now we've just picked up a project in California. We've got Fireweed, which is zinc, Ethos, which has a variety of drill plays, both in Canada and the U.S., Great Bear, Bluestone, that's a Valor, which has most recently gone into platinum metals in Brazil, so it's exciting times.
What is the benefit? I mean, I know what the benefit is just because I've been involved in this industry and have watched you and all these companies kind of progress forward. But what is the benefit of having a group like Discovery that has these companies that obviously has proven success in their own right in their own projects, but also having the backing for other companies that maybe are just getting off the ground?
Well, as we know, we've gone through extremely challenging times, really, for the last 10 years. I mean, I would argue ever since the global financial crisis, we had a couple of moments where the market, was somewhat buoyant, but we've gone through very tough times. And in the exploration cycle, the key thing is access to capital, and access to capital that doesn't dilute your company to the point where it becomes no longer relevant. And so one of the things that we bring to the table for somebody who, say, joins the Discovery Group or we find and develop a new company is access to capital. So we've been lucky, to have good access to capital, very strong partners in the finance side of the business, and also being able to attract, key support people. You might find a person who, has a great idea, but without the proper support around them, whether it be a CFO, mining engineers, all that, those are the things that a lot of younger people don't have access to, and we've been able to bring to bear. Bluestone's a great example of that. Northern Empire, which we sold last year, was another good example. Mike Allen, who we brought in to manage one of our companies, had a very good idea in terms of picking up the Sterling project in Nevada. We were able to bring, all the financing to come along to bring that along in a really tough market, and in the space of less than a year, turn around and sell that company, which we did to Coeur for a nice, healthy profit. So,
can you give us an understanding of how Discovery Group operates? I mean, before we were press record, you were kind of talking about, you don't take any fees, obviously, or anything, but it really is kind of a just a support system of financial support system using the backing of key people that you've developed relationships with from throughout your career?
Well, in a way, discovery is almost more a philosophy than anything. As you mentioned, like, there's a lot of groups out there that they'll have a group of companies, but they'll charge fees to them all. It's really a money-making exercise for a small number of people. And with Discovery, it's not even a legal entity. I mean, we don't charge fees. We share resources like marketing. But it's really just finding like-minded people, people that we think are top in their class, working together, that enjoy working together, that can share resources. And, you know, at any given time, one of the companies is almost always on a roll. And that helps lift the other ones. It helps raise our collective profile. Like, great right now, Great Bear's success, which is phenomenal, you know, helps raise the profile for all the companies. And, you know, it's just, it's nice to be able to work with a group of people that you enjoy working with. We don't treat ourselves too seriously, but yet, you know, we've got access to capital. We've demonstrated that even in the toughest markets, we've continued to have access to capital and been able to raise, you know, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in the last few years through a very bad market cycle. And being able to execute on sales, like Kaminak was a great sale. That was $520 million that we sold to Goldcorp. Northern Empire we sold last year. You know, we've had a good track record
So you mentioned that Discovery Group started off as a philosophy. Can you kind of describe what that philosophy is and why you kind of had that epiphany when you did about why you were going to launch Discovery Group?
Well, I guess to start with, I mean, if I look at myself, I'm an explorationist at heart. I can honestly say I really don't do what I do to just make money. I love the whole concept of exploration and discovery. And I like surrounding myself with people that share those same sort of values. You know, integrity is a big part of our sort of internal sort of philosophy. And, you know, just being able to find people that have a good nose for mineralization, know how to take a project and develop it on, is what gets me out of bed in the morning. I love that sort of thing. And I like doing it myself, and I like associating myself with people that share that philosophy. And so that's really how Discovery came about, was financing those people that, you know, have those same attributes. And, I mean, obviously it's worked out financially well, but it's really the sharing in the successes. I mean, I can't say that I'm part of the, you know, the physical discoveries that Great Bear's made, but I know that I was able to help steer them along the path that's taken them where they're at. And to me, that's like, those are the greatest rewards you can have in our industry, I think.
So how do these relationships come about? I mean, if, as a discovery group, are you looking at projects first and then people, or people then projects? Or, you know, what's that time frame look like?
It's a bit of both. I think the people side is absolutely the most critical thing. You can have a great project, and if you have the wrong people, it'll never work. So I would say I'm always on the hunt for people. Even at this conference, I've been meeting people that I'm always looking for people and going, like, you know, I think this person has the right stuff. And we've made mistakes in the past, bankrolled people that just turned out not to have the right stuff. But people are key. Absolutely. If you don't have the right people, your project's never going to succeed. But on the flip side of that, sometimes, you know, you run across a project that you know is an absolute winner, and then you build the team around it. Fireweed is a perfect example. Tom and Jason, the Mac Pass projects, are truly a world-class zinc, silver, lead set of deposits. So we were able to acquire that deposit, but we didn't have the management team in place. We went out, found somebody who's turned out to be an absolutely stellar CEO, Brandon McDonald. And so we've gone out and built the team around a project. Bluestone is the same thing. when we sold Kaminak, I got to know some of the senior people within Goldcorp, and one of their assets that Goldcorp was selling, Cerro Blanco, struck me as a fantastic opportunity, a fully permitted, high-grade gold deposit that we were able to buy for $18 million that Goldcorp had spent $240 million U.S. on. But I was the only unpaid employee of Bluestone. So then I had to go out and build a management team around an asset. So we do both. We'll find the people, and then we'll go find an asset for them to run. Or we'll find a project and then build the team around it. So we'll look at either opportunity.
It's funny you say that, because I've had this theme keeps popping up. And I would say half of the interviews I've done in the last couple of days, the difference between a company and a business, right? And you, on the business side, it almost appears that Discovery Group is helping build companies with these projects, right? But Discovery's still operating a business in some fashion. What are your thoughts on, in this mining sector, like, you know, reminding CEOs of these companies that there is a difference between a company and a business needs cash flow to actually be a business, where if you don't have the cash flow, you have a project and you have a company. Do you think about that stuff at all as kind of a leader of this organization that you have?
Well, you know, right now, and in our case, I mean, none of our companies have cash flow, right, in the sense of hopefully we will shortly in the case of Bluestone. But access to capital is absolutely critical. So I'm not sure if I'm going to answer your question properly, but if you don't have the right people, you won't have access to capital. And you can't build a business without people. You can have a great project, but without people, you have no business. I think that's the critical thing. Without people, you have no business.
What are some of the, if you can think back to, you know, the start of this whole process, what is something you learned that you kind of look at back now and it's like, you say like, oh man, that was a mistake, I learned a really hard lesson, or if I could do it again, I'd do it differently. What's some good example of somebody who's young and eager to maybe follow in your same footsteps, take a good lesson from this?
Well, you know, one of the biggest lessons for me, it took me a long time to realize that, you know, don't be afraid to think big. Don't think that you can't raise $100 million if you find the right project. And for a long time, I would come to conferences like this, and you'd look around, you'd see people that you knew were very successful, and you always kind of wondered, well, why can those guys raise like $100 million? You know, and I'm struggling to raise $1 million sometimes. And then you realize that people want you to think big. The banks don't want to raise $1 million for anybody. They want to raise you $100 million. They want to raise $500 million for you. And, you know, a good example was when we bought Cerro Blanco off Goldcorp, which, you know, today $18 million doesn't sound like an awful lot of money to raise to buy an asset, but trust me, 2.5 years ago, it was a huge amount. And at the end of the day, we ended up raising $80 million to buy the asset and to fund the development work there. And I realized, you know, that if you think big, that's what people want. Nobody's interested in small deals. And I continue to run into people that I've gone to school with and I've known, and they continue to chase after small deals, raise small amounts of money. And, you know, if you find the right project, you have the right people, the sky really is the limit. You know, you look at other people at these conferences, and they don't have any magic formula, right? They just, the real successful people just have, you know, obviously they have to be, you know, relatively smart, but they also have confidence. And that would be the biggest thing for me, for a young person starting out, is don't be afraid to think big.
And have a little bit of...
And fail. Yeah. Don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah, have conviction in your success or your failure, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we could finally sit down and chat and have you on Mining Stock Daily. And best of luck to you for the next couple of days here in Beaver Creek. And I assume you're going to Denver Gold as well.
A number of our team are going to be in Denver. I'm not going to be there. I'm going to catch the football game on Sunday and then heading home.
Oh, there you go. Go Broncos. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And welcome back to the Beaver Creek Precious Metal Summit. This is Trevor Hall with Mining Stock Daily. Another good interview here. Right now I'm joined with Stephen Swatton. He's the president and CEO of K2 Gold. K2 Gold is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange with the symbol KTO. And I've just been informed that they have applied for an OTC listing, and that should come hopefully here in the next couple of weeks. Stephen, nice to join you here, and welcome to Mining Stock Daily.
Well, thanks very much, and nice to see you again here.
Yeah, we had a nice pint in Dawson City a couple months ago at the Yukon Alliance. So.
Yeah, when back in Dawson, we were looking to raise the financing, and we were looking for $1 million. And in fact, as a result of some strong appetite, we've now disclosed $3.5 million. And so we've got plenty of money now to do what we need to do. And I was talking to you about the Californian project. We've secured the Californian project, and I'll be going down there next week to try and see what it is we can actually do on the ground going forward.
Can you talk us about the project, where it's located, what's kind of developments up to this point, and what you're looking to do until the end of the year?
Yeah, it's 200 kilometers west of Las Vegas. It's close to the town of Lone Pine. The nearest small establishment is Kela. It's outside of the Death Valley National Park, and it's about 5 kilometers by 4 kilometers in size. It's been looked at least five different companies in the past. Two of the most notable ones are BHP and Newmont, and they've actually put their own internal resource figures on the mineralization that's been found there. I don't really want to disclose what they are because they're non-compliant 43-101, but they're significant, and it's oxide gold, Carlin style, is what that's been touted. So we're quite excited about it. I mean, it was discovered in the 1980s, and through various reasons, it has not come to fruition just yet. We've now got the opportunity to work on it.
So what was it about this project that really kind of put that twinkle in your eye?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of you will probably heard of Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor is the CEO of Great Bear. And we were discussing in the office back in Vancouver about the best projects we'd ever seen in the past. And I used to work for BHP, so we were just discussing. He said, well, the best one I ever saw was 3 years ago, and I had it. But in those days, I couldn't raise any money. So he told me a little bit more about it. It's an oxide. If this was in Nevada, there'd be exploration all over it. But because it's in California, just the other side of the border, it's remained sort of relatively unknown and unloved, but the companies such as Newmont and BHP, in particular BHP, it was their very last gold project before they actually decided they weren't going to do any more gold exploration. They held on to it. So the reason I liked it so much is it's multi-gram, large area, right at surface as well. One of the untested trenches that Chris was looked at is 42 meters of 4 grams, and it's never been drilled. So you know, when you've got undrilled examples of trenching of that sort of magnitude, that's why I got the twinkle in my eye.
So you've raised some money in the last few months since the last time.
2 weeks actually.
2 weeks. So what's the plan now with the money?
We're going to do the reapply for a ground access drill program. At the moment, we have the right to drill, but it's got to be heli-borne. We've spoken to the BLM. The BLM are very cooperative and understand that we would rather have a drill access via the road. So I'm going to be talking to them about what's the best method of putting this forward, because there's three different ways of getting in with three different roads. We'll be also working with the local community to see what their concerns are. This area, it will have some opposition. We're expecting some, but at this stage, because we haven't started anything, there have been nobody's come and approached us yet.
Right. So. Well, that was obviously a question I wanted to ask about working in California, and I assume there's always going to be opposition to any sort of natural resource development in the state. Do you see that opposition coming from more local local organizations, or do you think it comes from from a statewide type of presence?
Yes, probably more the statewide, actually, Trevor. You know, like the moment, we've discussed with the locals, and I haven't really got a good read on it, but what I can say is that Lone Pine, the local town, it's a stopping off point to other destinations, and a lot of the jobs there are minimum wage. So the feeling I got from a couple of people in the government there is that they're open to anything that actually increases the tax revenue base. They don't want to be committal as to whether they'd be supportive or not, then that's not their job, but they would like to see the local hospital, for example, is being closed down simply because they don't have enough tax base there to keep it supported. So we've a feeling we're going to have our work cut out with people like the Sierra Club and others that will obviously become very interested in what we're doing, but we also think we'll have some local support.
Do you see opportunities to kind of form collaborations and partnerships with some of those NGOs before things kind of get divisive?
Yes, and we're exploring those avenues right now. And I'm looking to actually take on a CSR person, and I'll be interviewing somebody next week about this. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, it's better to be preemptive rather than reactive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I did want to ask you, because you and I were chatting this morning, we ran into each other, and you said you literally just drove here from Vancouver, which is, it's a pretty good feat in itself, to spend more time on the road than you will be here in Beaver Creek. But I think it just goes to show you just how committed you are to being here and sharing the story of the project. So.
Well, it's a bit of both in that. I've always wanted, every time I've worked in the United States, I just fly in, then fly out. And as you're flying over, what an amazing country. It's got so much diversity. And I kind of looked on a map just last week, and I thought, well, why don't I just drive down there? It'd be a lot more fun, and then I'll go across to our California property. I need to speak to a few people there, and then I'll drive back up the west side. What an amazing adventure. I mean, not too many people get the opportunity to do it, so I'm doing it.
So let's speak about optimism right now, because when you and I were kind of having that pint in Dawson City, you were kind of sharing how you kind of written off the industry a little bit. You were just kind of down out, but then you found this project in this bull market. And then tell us where, you know, what your thoughts on it and why you personally are really excited once again.
Yeah, it's interesting because the market we're in right now, certain projects people seem to latch onto and they really like. And honestly, quite honestly, a Californian project is not everybody's first choice. So when I spoke to you when we were having that beer there, I was pretty ambivalent about whether this was really going to work out or not. I had no idea, but it seems to have resonated. And the project we have in the Yukon is a very good project, but it's helicopter supported. Every time I go to site, it's got to be a $5,000 helicopter ride. I think the feeling that with Donald Trump making some changes in the BLM, and also just general feeling that the economy is doing a lot better, and the fact that it's the Discovery Group, we've already had two Discovery, you know, Cabernet was sold for $520 million. The market cap of Great Bear right now is sort of close to $300 million. The company, the group of companies is doing really well. So there has been this discussion amongst some of the finance groups here. Well, what's the next one off the Discovery Group? Well, I've been working on this for 9 months when we spoke last time. That's why I was a bit dejected. I still hadn't quite closed the deal. It'd been 9 months in making. And finally, we hit the right time. The gold price went up. There's a certain amount of sentiment of favorable towards the gold market. Right at the right time, we managed to secure the deal.
Why is it so important to have something like the Discovery Group that you know has the backing of not just your project and your company, but a group of projects that we know the market has proven success and exploration success? And why is that so important for somebody like K2,
Steve Swanton on his own going out with a project like this, I would be on the road all the time trying. I have heard of people here trying to raise $1 million, takes them 6 months. Honestly, Trevor, in one day, I had people calling me wanting to get involved. That's the strength of the Discovery Group right now. It's looked upon as a group of company that's very strong on doing the right sort of research and exploration and with some track record. Obviously, they already have a group of financiers which are well respected in the industry. It's a great group to be with because I don't have to really go out and peddle myself. I use the brand name, and John wouldn't put this forward if he didn't think it had some. He put $250,000 of his own money into K2. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like an indication of his confidence.
It's almost like a consolidation, but only on a company side rather than a jurisdiction side, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah, and there's a lot of strength behind it. I mean, obviously, you know, with Great Bear itself, I mean, that's a great play. But when you put seven other companies or eight other companies underneath the same umbrella, I mean, you get legitimate support almost right away.
You do, and particularly if you've had a little bit of success with two of them, they're always looking for the next two off the block. And look, John doesn't let anybody join the discovery group, so to speak. You have to have certain qualities. I mean, at the end of the day, all of us have, well, him and myself, we're one of the older two, but a lot of guys have got a lot of experience, and they've got experience either from majors, juniors. But the critical thing about the group is it's not about, we're not paying a management fee or anything. It's sitting around in the office discussing great projects that we've seen that we'd like to work on. That's where I got it from Chris. Me personally, I've worked a lot around the world with BHP. There's other stuff. As the market develops, they know that we'll have a deal flow second to none simply because of the experience of the people that have worked there.
Do you think that'll be a strength as you do move into California and you know there's probably going to be challenges on the CSR side to have somebody like a Discovery Group have your back and be like, listen, we are backing up this project and this company. Here's the success we've had and here's what we've done to mitigate some of your concerns.
Absolutely. And I think if you look back at Kaminak, which is one of the earliest successes that this group's had in the last few years, I mean, they did everything right with the First Nations, with the local communities and everything else. So we have a track record of actually making things happen in difficult jurisdictions. And that's the point. California is not going to be an easy jurisdiction, but we have a history of making it happen in difficult places. And, you know, I think we're probably ready for every challenge. My background with BHP, of course, we had to be really careful on every CSR issue that we were looking at. And I think that experience that I've had will really help with the Discovery Group and with this project in California.
Let me ask you about the gold market real quick. Let me get your thoughts. It seems like in the last few days we are seeing some consolidation in the gold price, and it's a healthy consolidation. What do you think could be a catalyst to get this upward momentum back again, and how high do you think this thing could go?
Oh, I don't know where to start answering that question. It's a very difficult one. I think if one of the junior companies does have, like Great Bear, they manage to sell the company or something like that, that all eyes would be on the market in general. Okay, it really, the game's back on. At the moment, everybody's a little bit tentative whether this surge we're seeing is going to have longevity. But I think if you see a real sale to one of the medium, larger companies of something like Great Bear, it would be really game on.
We haven't seen as much M&A activity in the past year as people were expecting this time last year, right? And so I think, I don't know if people are really disappointed, but it is something, you know, what's the next catalyst going to be to get M&A activity up and going in this sector?
Well, it's something like that. And you're here with me at this conference. I think there's a lot more optimism than there was last year. You were here last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a lot more upbeat. I can see very many familiar faces here that I haven't seen for a long time.
Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein.